Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Laura Pfeiffer, and I'm a naturopathic doctor helping you take your hormones from chaos to calm. In this podcast, I'm searching the internet, mainly Reddit, to find out what you are talking about. I'm diving into the questions you have, the things you are too embarrassed to talk about, and helping you navigate our healthcare system with ease. This is the Hormone Hub Podcast. Now, I don't know who you're in the car with, if you're listening to this in the car, but I always promised to keep it PG. So, I just hit the camera if you're seeing the video. I promise to keep it PG. So, I'm going to read this posters right into Reddit, and I'm going to avoid the curse words, but I'm going to allow you to make your own assumptions at what's being said. So the title is called, Can We Effing Talk About Perimenopause? And you know what? I feel like that's a good title because with the patients that I work with, this is a common concern. This is something that a lot of people don't talk about. It's like you're either cycling or you're in menopause, but what happens in between? This perimenopausal state is just not talked about. So this person wrote, I entered perimenopause at the start of the pandemic, which is like full stop. That's a hard time to enter perimenopause because, and it could have been because of the stress of the pandemic. It could have kind of led to a quicker move into menopause or perimenopause. It's been a long road trying to understand what was going on with me. The fear of cancer is real. Having two periods a month, WTF, like one isn't enough. I just feel like our society is so afraid to talk about perimenopause and menopause. It's fine to say the word menopause and talk about hot flashes, but there's so much more that goes on and it starts way before that. I feel like women at my age are becoming less desirable of the group, and so let's not talk about something so unattractive. Does anyone else feel that way, or am I just hormonal, aka hysterical at the moment? I think this poster has so many valid thoughts here that I see in my patients all the time. Perimenopause is a wild time, and I think it's really important that we talk about all of the pieces that are involved in this time period. So let's effing talk about it. So let's just take a step back and talk about perimenopause and what it means, because I will have patients who are, you know, 35 years old and their periods are heavy and they're getting more painful and there are maybe spotting between cycles, and all of a sudden they're like, oh no, Laura, I am going through perimenopause. And my biggest thing is, okay, we need to figure out if you are, because there's a lot of reasons for your period to become wonky, especially after you have children, right? Let's factor in all the things that can contribute to irregular periods or missed periods. The first one being stress. So when your cortisol is high, your stress hormone is going to inhibit or delay ovulation altogether. And that's going to move you into a place where your periods might be spotting and they might be delayed and they might be, you know, off, right? So that's an important thing to note there, is stress can be a contributing factor. The other thing is insulin. If you've gotten to a place where maybe you've had your kids, maybe lifestyle choices have been wonky, maybe you've been super stressed, which can impact your insulin, maybe your diet's kind of, you know, fallen off, like maybe you're eating a ton of sweets and you used to work out and you're not working out because you're busy with children and events and sports and everything else, or you haven't been taking care of yourself because you're putting everyone first. And that's what I find a lot of women between the age of like 35 to, you know, 65 are putting everyone first before themselves. And before they know it, they're like, wait, when was my last period? Maybe they've missed a month. Maybe they have had a worse period. Maybe it's more painful. Maybe it's more spotty. Maybe it's cloddy. Like, what is going on in that moment is really important to identify. So how do we know if it's perimenopause or something else? Well, we test, right? So how do we go about testing as it pertains to perimenopause? The first thing we need to look at is estrogen, LH, and FSH. So normally what I will do, if someone is getting their period, I'll say, okay, let's get a day 3 measurement of your FSH. Now, if you haven't had a period in 6 months, we can just test your FSH and we can see if you fall in the perimenopausal category. So if your FSH is like 30, you're definitely in menopause. If your FSH is like 21, then we can say, oh, okay, so you're not technically classified as menopause based on your, you know, FSH levels, but also the fact that if we did it on a day 3, then you likely bled, you had a period, and that's the reason why we have a day 3 measurement. We have to remember that perimenopause can be up to 10 years, and menopause is 1 year after your periods have stopped. So if you get a period, and then you get a period again, and then you get a period 3 months later, and then you get a period 6 months later, you are not in menopause. But if your FSH is slowly creeping up, you may in fact be in perimenopause. And that's an important differentiation to be able to make. So getting FSH can be really helpful to determining this. The other thing is, if you're getting periods, but they're sporadic, or maybe you're getting periods and they're regular and they're getting worse and you think you're in perimenopause because of that, well, then what we would do is we would track ovulation throughout that month, right? You get your period, we might do blood work day 3, look at FSH, look at LH, look at estrogen. And then we would get you to track ovulation and you see if you ovulate. And then after, if we test progesterone and know that we can either confirm or deny ovulation, that can be part of the picture, right? Because if you're not ovulating, that can be a sign paired with other things that you're going through perimenopause. And so it's important to look at all of these things and put them together to create a full clinical picture. But like I said, there's lots of other reasons why people will experience, you know, a lot of these symptoms that this poster is talking about. So let's talk about 2 periods in 1 month. So why does this happen? There's a number of reasons. Most often, this is because of lack of ovulation. And so if we back up and we look at the menstrual cycle, how it runs at someone who's cycling normally, we have the first half of the cycle dedicated to estrogen. We're building up the lining. We're building up the follicles. We're getting ready to ovulate. The second half of the cycle is dedicated to progesterone. So after we ovulate, we make progesterone. Progesterone hits its peak about 7 days post-ovulation. And then from there, we wait for pregnancy, right? And then if we're not pregnant, then we know we need to start the cycle again. And so what happens is sometimes we cannot ovulate. So whether we're not ovulating because we're entering menopause and we're in this perimenopausal state, what happens is because of the hormonal changes in perimenopause, your hormones are going to kind of be random. So it's going to be like, you know, 1 month you ovulate, 2 months later you ovulate, the next month you don't ovulate, 2 months after that you ovulate, right? So it's going to be a little bit more of that sporadic type of ovulation. This is actually a time in, so between, you know, I don't know, the age of 38 to 45 is actually a time where some women will actually get pregnant because their ovulation is so sporadic. They might think they're in menopause. They might think they can no longer have kids. And usually after the age of like 42, the chances are very, very low, but there is a chance and some people will get pregnant during this time. So it's important to understand, regardless of where you're at in your cycles, regardless of where your hormones are at, it's really important to understand if you're ovulating, right? So I would say get those LH strips. You can get them off of Amazon, or you can buy the Clear Blue or whatever brand you want to buy, and actually track your ovulation, because we want to know if you're ovulating. If you are ovulating, when is that happening? And is it consistent, right? Are you ovulating 3 months in a row? Are you not ovulating for 2 months? Is it random? Is it sporadic? Like, how do we know what the next move is? If you're saying, oh, I had a really bad period this month, or I have 2 periods in this month. Normally what I'll say to my patients, especially if they have a history of normal cycles, I want to see 3. So a pattern of 3 usually tells us if this is going to be an ongoing problem. If you have one month where you get a period twice and it's totally a one-off for you and it never happens again, could be because of digestive issues, it could be because of stress, it could be because of a number of reasons. Once you are more in tune with your body and what's going on every single month, it's easier to identify these changes. It's easier to say, oh, this is what happened as a result of XYZ, right? I find for myself, if, you know, I have an off month with digestion, or I was really sick, or I had to be on antibiotics, or in the case of getting COVID, I've found that our family has now had it twice because we're so lucky. In those times that we've had it, I've noticed my period to come early or a little bit late. and surrounding the months surrounding that were completely normal. And so the first time I had it, I was actually only 3 weeks postpartum. So that was pretty difficult. So anyways, fun. But you go from like bleeding postpartum, and I got my period literally the next, you know, a week after. I had like a week break, and then I got my period, and they started monthly, and that was because I ended up having COVID. So we have to look at all the factors, right? When we have a stress on the body, when we have an illness in the body, that can cause you to bleed. And so understanding that we need three to make a pattern will really help with, you know, creating that, the pattern to get us more information is what I'm trying to say. So that's the first thing, is getting the right testing, tracking your symptoms, and getting the right pattern of symptoms so that we can actually really understand what's going on. The other thing that can cause you to have two periods in 1 month is a thyroid issue, right? So when's the last time you had your thyroid evaluated? A lot of times we look at specifically autoimmune thyroid disease. It's like, when are women the most vulnerable to getting thyroid disease? Well, usually because it's an autoimmune disease, it's the same times where we have hormonal fluctuations. So that is usually postpartum, in menopause, or after a serious illness. So what I often see is someone who is entering perimenopause and they're having heart palpitations, hot flashes, all of the other, you know, wonderful, lovely symptoms that their doctor is just chalking up to perimenopause. But what they're not doing is doing a full thyroid evaluation and investigation, including antibodies and the actual hormones, free T3 and free T4, to see how those hormones are functioning, right? We could have fine TSH within that wide range, and that's okay. Even your T4, as long as it's within the range, it's okay. And even from a naturopathic perspective, I don't really particularly care if it's actually at the lower end of the range, as long as your T3 is adequate. And so what I look at is, if you're making T4 on the lower end of the range, are you converting enough of it to T3 so you have enough active hormone to actually act on your tissues and give you that support you need? Your thyroid's your metabolism. It has hands in your nervous system. It has hands in your reproduction. And so if it's not working properly, you can have heavy periods, light periods, and missed periods. And so that's something to consider as well, looking at your thyroid. Stress hormone is going to impact that as well, right? Stress hormone can cause us to delay ovulation. When we delay ovulation, we can bleed. We can have what's known as breakthrough bleeding. And so if we're looking at it from a, you know, not ovulating perspective, it's like, okay, well, you could not be ovulating just this month. This is why we look at patterns, because you could not be ovulating just this month because you had a really stressful month, or there's a grief or a loss, or something along those lines. Or it could be that your hormones are changing and you're starting perimenopause, and that's something that we should look into as well, right? So looking at those pieces, also estrogen dominance can cause you to bleed. It's kind of like a breakthrough bleed. And now keep in mind, if you are getting two periods in 1 month and you're on birth control, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't give us any information whatsoever. But if you aren't on hormonal birth control and you're bleeding and that's weird for you, then this is something we need to look at. Things like fibroids, things like endometriosis, adenomyosis, these things can make you bleed or have a period early or spot between cycles. Polyps can play a role, making sure you're getting Paps, because we're looking for cervical cancer at least every 3 years if they've come back normal, right? So these are the things that we need to be evaluating if your periods are coming more than once a month, or they're weird and they're changing, because we need to see, is there something functional or structural? Is there a hormone change? And how do we go about investigating that? So that's the first thing we need to do, is we don't wait till you're in menopause. And then talking about the societal norms, it's like, it makes me think about the TV broadcaster who got fired because she, in reporters' terms, had gray hair. So I watched her on TV for years. Was it Lisa LaFlamme? And she most recently let her hair go gray over the pandemic because, you know, things were shut down, and she just figured, you know what, this is easier. And I actually thought she looked really great, and she rocked it, and she didn't have to get her hair done. She didn't have to, you know, worry about touch-ups, and it was a lot easier. And think about it in the same way men let themselves go gray, and it seems like it's a fine thing, but for some reason, this transition, like, people are more attracted to men as a society when they're gray. Like, look at the George Clooney's of the world, right? Look at all the, you know, dads that go gray. People find them more attractive. This, like, salt and pepper look is something that women talk about all the time, and I don't know what the reason is that women can't be looked at on the same pedestal. And I think a lot of women feel like when they go into this perimenopause, menopause phase in their life, they're no longer attractive. And as a society, I can understand why, because women kind of age out. Like, we see this with, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, like, dating only women. It's a joke, but like, dating only women under 25, and then he breaks up with them. And, you know, but women go after these older men who we deem attractive if they are, you know, at a certain age or at a certain status. And women don't often get that same grace. So I understand that there is an emotion associated with this transition and this change. And oftentimes perimenopause and menopause is paired with so many things, because you're going through this transition at a time in your life where it just so happens that your children are probably, you know, old enough to care for themselves. And so maybe you were their primary caregiver, and now you're kind of like, they're leaving the nest and they're, you know, moving off to university, or maybe they're having children, like, depending on how old you are and depending when you had kids. And so those can create transitions as well. And there's changes in relationships with your partner, and, you know, sex drive might change with your hormones, and vaginal dryness might come into play. And those are things that also should be addressed. And these are things that are not talked about. The other things that I find that aren't talked about, like, I feel like when we talk about perimenopause and menopause, it's hot flashes, night sweats, hot flashes, night sweats. But it's never, you know, the weight gain, feeling less desirable, you know, the vaginal dryness and the sex drive, brain fog, feeling like, you know, someone who used to work out and have a really good body composition, I find in perimenopause or menopause, will always come see me and say, there's this spare tire around my midsection. And that is also hormonal. And I think there's a piece of it of acceptance, of saying, you know, just how we accepted our body if you had children, just how you had to accept your body, you know, the changes that your body allowed you to make in order to create a human, you have to accept your body as it moves into this phase of life. But I understand how it can be frustrating. And it can also be frustrating because a lot of times you go see your doctor and they say, yep, welcome to menopause. And then they don't do anything. And the only option is hormone replacement therapy. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because hormone replacement therapy has its risks. Now, as a naturopathic doctor, I have access to bioidentical hormones, which I find very useful. But here's the catch 22. When you look at how estrogen and progesterone are processed, progesterone actually makes its way. It's called a cortisol steel effect. So if you're a person that is very stressed, you're always under, like, under the gun, you're always high stress, you lived a high stress life, you had a high stress job, no matter where you're at now, you're probably in a little bit of adrenal fatigue from a lifetime of stress. And what happens if we think about hormones and how they're made is after menopause, or before menopause, let's start, your ovaries make most of your hormones. And then after menopause, your ovaries are no longer making hormones. And so the hormones are being made by your adrenal glands. If your adrenal glands have already been taxed for your whole entire life, then now you're at a place where you're just like trickling in a little bit of hormones from your adrenals, but your adrenals aren't doing a very good job. And so you're going to be tanking in production of hormones, but you may or may not be making a really good amount of cortisol. But what happens is if I give you progesterone to help with sleep and help with weight and help with mood and all of these things, all of the wonderful things that natural progesterone does, if your adrenals are not properly addressed, if we don't treat your adrenals appropriately, then you end up with a cortisol steal effect. Your body actually steals the cortisol and moves it towards progesterone your body steals the progesterone and moves it towards cortisol because your body says, no, 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 we are stressed. We need to use this for a different thing. And so what I find is before we dive into just doing bioidenticals, we really, really need to treat the adrenals. We really need to make sure that your stress is managed. Excuse me. We need to add in exercise. We need to add in meditation. We need to be drinking water. We need to be having nutritious food. So these are all things that we can talk about in that perimenopausal state. And in my opinion, this is not a time in your life that you should be on birth control. I know a lot of times doctors tell their patients, oh yeah, no, let's just put you on birth control and then you can come off of birth control, you know, when you're 55, and we'll just assume that you're in menopause. But all this time we are, you know, not supporting our adrenals. We're not looking at the ways in which our hormones are impacting our body, especially if you were someone who had PCOS or had other issues when you were younger. These things may result in a metabolic issue. So for example, someone with PCOS has an increased risk of having diabetes. And so this is important to look at because birth control can worsen your insulin response. And so there's a lot of pieces to this puzzle. It's not just as simple as, yeah, you know what, let's to put you on birth control and shut off the rest of your systems and just see how you do. In my experience, these are the patients that do worse in perimenopause and menopause because their body's been almost like whiplashed. Like they were put on birth control after kids, given these synthetic hormones for years and years and years, and then taken off. So that ovary-brain communication has been shut off for so long that you just tank right into menopause, and it's not a good transition, and your symptoms are probably worse, and your estrogen processing is probably a problem as well. Take a listen to my episode prior to this. We're talking about menopause and IBS, and you'll hear all the reasons why anxiety can be involved, depression can be involved, the microbiome plays a role, and gut health is really important in this stage of life. I hope you learned something from this, and I hope to be here next week. Thanks, guys.